Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this special guest episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In this episode, we welcome in Ivan Skelem. Ivan is a men's trainer and coach best known for his work with masculine archetypes and the acclaimed Reclaim Your Inner Throne initiation. After a spiritual metamorphosis had him close down his popular initiation in 2021, Ivan's focus shifted to awakening the heroic impulse in men across the planet. He believes that men have lost too much strength and purpose in the futile effort of integrating their inner feminine and is working to make men strong again. A native Norwegian, he currently lives with his family in rural Sweden. Ivan, brother, it's an honor and privilege to have you on the call, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Mark.
Ivan, the curiosity I always have with guys that, like yourself, have come to men's work, deep men's work, shadow work, whatever way you might want to call it. My curiosity is, what's the autobiographical path that you took to finding deep men's work in the first place?
Nice. Yeah, I like exploring that question. It's been a while since I did, so it feels kind of fresh to do it again. I was somebody who was quite, I was curious about my surroundings from early on. And I remember one of the personal struggles that I had was to realize that grown-ups lie. When I started to become mindful of that initially, it was a huge sense of disillusionment. Like, they lie. What? Like, there was something about that felt wrong. And I looked at them and I had less respect for them. That sometimes even included, you know, my own parents, even though, for the most part, my dad, for instance, he was a man of integrity and he was a disciplined man and to some extent a disciplinarian, although never physically, but, you know, in terms of words and admonitions. So I think I had the blessing and partially also the curse of having more of a traditional father. He was also much older than many of the fathers in my circle of friends. And so he was a man who could remember the Second World War vividly. And so he had known hardship and, you know, it pained him, I think, to see that the things that he had valued from growing up in a harder time were starting to fade as values and morals and virtues and in his later years. And yeah, it wasn't always easy being his son, I must admit. And since I was very sensitive, and this is probably more thanks to the line that comes from my mom. She was from further up in northern Norway, where people are closer to nature in some kind of ancient way. I guess it's not necessarily so stark, that contrast these days, as it was, but she came from a small fishing village, you know, and there were people there who were the known magicians, the people who had spells to cast to stop bleeding and things like that. So that was just normal. So I ended up in this weird meeting between my parents, and combined with my sensitivity, I think I started to struggle with integrating fairly extreme opposites. They were very different people, very different people. And that sensitivity led me down a road of a lot of, you know, inquiry. And since I was the person that I was back then, I would tend to take it in on me and and start to come to conclusions that there was something wrong about me and things like that. You know, it's I guess you could call me more of an introvert type, and also having been sensitive to begin with, that was a natural direction to go, like in. But I hadn't had really an explicit initiation or schooling of what it meant to be a man, or what it meant to be strong and, you know, connected to your heart and strong. So I was struggling quite a bit in that period, and as so many men experience, I went through my, you know, period of, you know, like wondering, is it worth living? Is it, does it have any purpose for me to be here in this world? And well, I never explicitly tried to end it. It was part of my, you know, day-to-day contemplation for quite some time in the beginning of my 20s. And then for whatever reason, one day I just went online. I guess it was motivated by a lot of suffering back then, and I started to proactively seek out solutions, like how can I make myself suffer less. Randomly, I discovered some website about meditation. I started meditating. Soon after, I became quite involved in Tibetan Buddhism. I would travel to the Himalayas and to India on a couple of occasions on formative trips, and it was on the latter of those trips that I had this strong realization. I must have been about 28 years at the time, and I was very unaccomplished in many ways that I secretly wanted to be accomplished, such as with women, for instance. But I had focused everything on spiritual pursuit and becoming a good meditator. And it was on that latter meditate or that latter pilgrimage that I suddenly realized how I was deceiving myself in a very profound way. And instead of actually being in the Himalayas, making some sort of dedications to being enlightened or something like that, I dedicated to come back home and to really figure out, you know, the social game and women and the things that I've been running away from for so long. Yeah. And so it wasn't in the period of kind of becoming a human again, you know, instead of being just a dude that sat meditating all day and secretly being judgmental and arrogant because everyone else was so, you know, spiritually primitive. I see you nodding your head, so maybe you know what I'm talking about.
I have so much autobiographical shit to just share in that, man. I was the most righteous son of a bitch on the planet in my mid late 20s.
Well, it sounds like sounds like we have that in common then.
My queen would probably tell me, what the fuck, like mid late 20s? Yeah, well into your late 30s. And so anyway, back to you, brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and so it was when I had my very first girlfriend at the ripe age of 28 that I realized, hey, men's work. There are these guys, they're promoting something in the paper, because people did that back then. They promoted courses in newspapers. I saw it and I was intrigued, and I went. And it was good, man. It was a good training. It was from two of the grand old men in the men's work world in Norway, where I'm from. And it was especially one of those two men that made a big impact on me. And he punctured my spiritual ego completely, and in a very simple way. He didn't use any energy to do it whatsoever. He was just like a solid man seeing right through me. And I think from then on, I just realized that there's something here. And you know, that was the start of my own personal men's work. But eventually, of course, I created my own. But that's an overview. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. The that part of the arrogance, I know in myself, of learning new ideas, techniques, words that I just found replaced my old wording. But it was the exact same psychological paradigm I was coming from. I just thought it was better with funky, groovy. Yeah, Tibetan Buddhism was in there as well. So when you found men's work, you get your ego punctured by this guy and maybe other guys, the collective men in your life. At some point, you go deeper. I know when I reached out to you, you know, pre the spiritual metamorphosis in recent years, you got very deeply involved in masculine archetypal work. I do have a curiosity, and what brought you into archetypal work? And then there is that metamorphosis where you have went beyond archetypal work. To bring it here, I bring it within the culture of the podcast here to let you in and guys in. I have spoken to, you know, king, warrior, magician, lover within the movement, but I haven't made it front and center. So I'm curious as to what attracted you first, and yeah, your transition to go beyond that amount of focus on that paradigm.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason why I was attracted to the masculine archetypes was that it felt very resonant with the deep interest and fascination that I had with mythology and fairy tales when I was little. This is probably, if I was going to trace it back to parental lineage again, this feels like my mom's lineage coming in. She was also intrigued with spiritual phenomena and the paranormal and fairy tales. So, you know, growing up with reading various Norwegian folklore and Norse mythology, Greek mythology, as well as fantasy literature like Tolkien's Lord of the Rings and the Shannara Chronicles and the Wheel of Time and things like that, it was quite front and center to be inside of a mythical, worldview, a symbolic worldview. And then obviously, once I had deepened into the sciences of the mind and the spirit, then sooner or later, as you do, you discover Carl Jung and depth psychology. And even though I generally wasn't drawn directly towards the Jungian or Carl Jung's writings himself, I felt very at home in that world. And you know, Joseph Campbell, Robert Bly, Robert Johnson, Robert Moore, these guys are important characters in that world. And in large part, they are the fathers of the men's movement, you could say. They were the grand old men that were responsible for the like men's movement 1.0. And yeah, it was, I guess initially it was just a book, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover by Robert Moore. But it was a book that I really enjoyed. And soon after, I don't quite remember chronologically right now, but I started a website called masculinitymovies.com. And I had this idea that, hey, why don't I use a popular culture as sort of a mirror for understanding the male psyche? And I spent a ton of time analyzing movies in an archetypal context. I found it to be very meaningful. It sort of opens up movies like a Russian doll, you know, it's like layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. And it's not necessarily obvious initially. And I had a gift for that. And a lot of men would come and like say things to me like, having read your reviews, like blowing my mind with regards to my understanding of this movie. It's like, this is this is next level. You know, I didn't see this now or before, but I see it now. So it was meaningful for me. I felt, of course, a sense of validation and having something to contribute to other men out there. I built a little bit of a name for myself, which obviously is nice. I had a random thing happened that I ended up being number one on Google for King Warrior Magician Lover, thanks to an article in masculinitymoves.com. So I took that as a sign that, hey, this is kind of like my niche. But I mean, it's not easy to end up number one on Google these days. So it just happened. So yeah, I became that guy, and I became quite well known for it. I reached out to Robert Moore personally. He gave me his blessing. I started leading workshops with a friend of mine, Paul Christian Bunce, in Norway. We wanted to do something with the things we have been learning, and this seemed to be a very strong framework for doing it. We had an interesting experience with sitting down and planning a workshop. We went out to his family's summer house in the Norwegian archipelago, and we just sat down there and really started thinking, how are we going to do this? And you know, we were going through the four archetypes, and I had a bit of a revelation at that point, which is, it's easy to find work for the warrior, the magician, and the lover. We had learned so much about that, you know, from various processes around the workshops and the various, you know, alternative educations that we had taken. But neither him nor I had ever been through a process that dealt with the archetypal king. And I found that even back then to be odd. Like, why don't we have a concept of what the king is? And so we spent quite a while actually innovating. So for the three other archetypes, we just kind of like repurposed things that we had done elsewhere. But we created a whole new process work modality. And that was, we called that reclaiming a throne, because, you know, it ended up being that work. It was a bit like a family constellation, just more higher energy and more focused. So we would take a representation of the inner tyrant that lives inside of a man and put him in a chair that was the throne. And then one man would facilitate the process as the magician. And then on the one side of the throne would be the active pole of the warrior, and on the other side of the throne would be the passive pole of the lover. And so what we would do is we would facilitate this person back and forth between the lover and the warrior in order for them to reclaim the inner throne with their own inner authority, not in like a sadistic way or like wailing or screaming of like, give it back to me, you know, but just like, why are you there? It's mine. It's self-evidently true that this is my throne. Leave, you know. And then we would have the royal court, which would be the other participants that would keep giving a grade, like, have you deserved it? Is this real? Is it authentic? And so it became this sort of this group consciousness field that would work inside of a man in order to liberate him. And like in a different life and with a different man, he would have dedicated his whole life to that particular modality. And there's nobody who's leading it out there in the world now. And it's probably one of the most powerful modalities that exist, and nobody's leading it. So, because I moved on, you know, I was interested in new things, but the people who experience it say that I've never, you know, the wow, you know, so that was the beginning of it, where I just realized, okay, not only do I know how to analyze movies through this lens, I can speak about it well. I created a model now. And I can do process work. So we've taken this quite far. Now the question is, can I take all of this into an online training? And that's where Reclaiming the Throne, the online initiations, came from. And it was a 3 month, or at the longest, it started out as a 12-week training and ended up as a 15-week training, where I took men through like a bit of a mythological world. They have a full world map and everything, and each week they would travel through a different locale that presented certain qualities of the male psyche. So it would be a full underworld journey, and the meeting with their abandoned child in the dark places, and that would be quite a marvelous process for those who had the pleasure to experience it. It became very well spoken of, and it was a good 7 years leading that work.
So my natural curiosity, and with how you've pitched that, and I've read the website, I've read the, what you had created, I was deeply impressed by what was how it was being spoken about or displayed via testimonials, etc. With that level of depth and effectiveness in that work, what was that spiritual metamorphosis that some inner no came up, or maybe it was more an inner yes to something to go beyond. What spurred that exactly?
The metamorphosis that I experienced had to do with certain realizations that I had during the COVID pandemic. And this is where I may lose some of your listeners. Or maybe you will be like, oh, thank God somebody is saying it. But I felt there's an evil in the world that has become expressed in a way that I never imagined that I would feel. Like the level of tyranny, the level of indoctrination, the level of propaganda, the insanity that I saw unleashed right in front of my eyes. I couldn't make sense of it initially. But it was clear that it was wrong. And I think it was November 2020. I guess the madness had been going on for a few months. And Michelle's dad was dying, and she was in a hotel quarantine in Hong Kong. She had to stay in a room in a high-rise building for 2 weeks in order to earn access to her own fucking country, like Hong Kong. And she was over there, and I was here in, well, there. I lived in Oslo at the time. I don't know. And then I just had this, of course, I'd seen that people in my network had spoken of this pandemic as a rather different thing than the news was presenting it as. But for whatever reason, it didn't quite click for me until that evening. And but then there was this wave of darkness that just washed over me, and I felt like I was face to face with profound evil. And I got actually scared initially. And in large part because I'm like, okay, Michelle is in Hong Kong. I don't know if that I will see her again. Will this ever ease up? And I had a painful Christmas that year, I remember, because I was so in the unknown about things. And at that time, Reclaiming the Throne had already started to feel a little bit empty for me, purpose-wise. It was just like one round after another, same thing, same thing. Every man having exactly the same problems, and it's like, it's wonderful to support men, but it's like, okay, so I've heard this like how many hundreds of times before. So all of the things that I had been Sharing with the men that I was working with and reading in the storybooks and in the mythology, all of a sudden dropped in as, oh wow, this is not just fairy tales, it's actually what's moving in the world right now. That's what I felt. And so I felt the presence of something truly evil and demonic that was just like all of a sudden there that I'd never felt before. And what happened was that at the in the underworld part of the journey inside of reclaiming a throne, there, I took the men through a ritual that essentially I made myself, but it was inspired by Inuit shamanism, and I called it a living sacrifice, and it was a shamanic ceremony in which the men went out into the woods at night. I mean, I was full on with this, you know. I took told go into the woods at night and summon the demons to come and eat on you, you know, let them eat you, you know, because this is how you practice surrender. And they did, and it was powerful. Like many men had like crazy transformative experiences. But the truth of the matter is that when I had that insight at the end of 2020, all of a sudden I asked myself, do I actually genuinely know what I'm asking these men to do? If this evil that I'm encountering now through my sixth sense, I suppose, my intuition, but it was just there, strong. If I'm telling the men to go and be eaten by demons, do I really know what I'm doing? I am not aware of any man being hurt in any way by the ritual, but I felt that something in the world had changed and it was no longer responsible for me to conduct that process. And I shut the whole thing down and I had no clue what to do. That's the story.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. The guys don't get to have the video recording, but from your tone of voice for sure, but I can really see in you the depth of that hit home. I will speak, and I'm not going to say that it's the exact same interpretation of the word demonic. But through that whole experience in the movement here, I talk about the profoundly sick society that we live in. For me,
The
that
what, sorry,
period,
the what six?
the profoundly sick society that we
Yeah.
live in. I had a
Yes.
guest on the podcast. He was on twice. Incredible man called Four Arrows. He was welcomed into the Ogala Lakota tribe in Northern America. He's went through the full initiatory processes, four sun dances, and he's an amazing academic studying indigenous tribes, old cultures, and he brought a book out. I'm forgetting the exact name, but the thesis of the book is the 26 pillars of society of indigenous tribes when compared with modern society, Western civilization, as we can generically call it. And it's just a simple contrast of 26 pillars of society, all indigenous tribes. They're connection oriented, and every single exact same pillar within Western culture, it's disconnection oriented. It was a wide sweeping academic breakdown of what I was more and more witnessing. It just made it so stark and so obvious. So maybe it's, demonic forces, but forces and mind and a mindset out there that is not for human thriving or thriving of life on earth. That's definitely the language that I would come through. It just became very, from a personal perspective in that time, starkly obvious and ugly and to the surface. From that position, and I know in the conversation here, I'm really excited what came through you at some point was what I believe you're calling the 5D man lifestyle. I'm really wanting the conversation to shift to that because it just seems as a framework so intuitively from what I've grasped, even just the simplicity of the words, it's like I intuitively am, yeah, come on, this is so empowering. When did the 5D man lifestyle teaching or framework come through you? How did that come about?
Must be a couple of years ago by now. And I feel like I exhausted the archetypal framework through a podcast that I did. I just put on my headsets and went for morning walks, and I started like blabbering on about things that were happening in the world and bringing in an archetypal interpretation. And I had to feel complete with the archetypal map, in a sense. And then part of that process as well was to essentially do what I could to bring the truth of Robert Moore's death to the world, because he was wrongfully accused of murder. And it tarnished his legacy. And frankly, I'm going to bring out my judgmental self, but I was shocked that the Men's World work didn't do anything to clean this man's name when they had their whole career to thank him for, you know? I didn't see anyone do anything. Like, speaking of that disconnection thing that you're talking about, it's like, are you just going to take from him? And when somebody's clearly lying about what and how his life ended, you're just going to like ignore it. So I felt very disillusioned with the world of men's work at that point, but I took it upon myself to bring that out. And it was, I'm not saying that it's a particularly heroic thing, but you know, it's part of my commitment is to be so committed to truth that I will do things that are uncomfortable and potentially that will sacrifice, that will lead to sacrifice. And I think I managed to complete with the archetypes thanks to that. And because of the story that I just shared with you, I felt like, okay, it's time to stand more on my own legs. It's time to also bring this framework of King, Warrior, Magician, Lover a bit closer to the real world. Because I felt like the association still was very closely aligned with fantasy literature and mythology and things like that. So it was very easy for the men that I worked with to be kind of seduced into kind of a Tolkien-esque landscape when we were working with these archetypes. And I, as beautiful as that was, I also felt that it was a bit of a cop-out. Like, okay, it's sure, we're having a great experience to reclaim Mina's throne, but what are you actually doing in your life? You know, I'd like to tell me. So the 5D man lifestyle, which 5D is dimensions, five, but it's not the classic five, you know, 3D, 4D, 5D. It's more that there are five dimensions of the framework that I consider to be crucial to living a good life. And it is loosely inspired by the archetypal framework, you know, but I don't make that link explicit anymore. There are four core core dimensions. That's clarity, courage, connection, and creation. And then there's like a fifth meta dimension that lifts all of the other four, and that's commitment. So this whole system comes from the work that or the model that I developed when I was working with the archetypes. You know, you remember the setup with the throne and the warrior and the lover. That whole image came from the depiction of a triangle, which is a facet of a pyramid. You know, it's, and that comes from the octahedron, the double quaternio that Jung conceptualized in some of his writing. And so I understood that there is the symbol of the pyramid. You know, it has occult implications. Some of them good. Some of them bad. But I saw that, okay, so you have clarity, courage, connection, and creation. Like the first three we came up with for a retreat in Norway in 2019. We called it Kings of the North. And, we focus on clarity, courage, and connection. We call it the Three Viking Keys. It was like a Norse inspired retreat. It was a wicked cool retreat, actually. It was a highlight in my career in many ways. It was a documentary on national television and everything. It was really cool. So the three came from there, and at the end of that retreat, we had this experience of rushing the men into like making some commitments about what they were going to do when they came home. And I was like, well, that feels a bit of an afterthought, but of course that's creation. You have to do something with the transformative work. Like, that's the creation. And so you could say clarity is loosely connected with magician. You see clearly, you have a mastery of the mind and the spirit, shall we say. There's an inner illumination. And courage, of course, there's a connection with the warrior, and embodiment, the body mastering the body. Connection, you guess, what archetype is that?
I gotta jump at lover, and if I get this wrong, I'm back to being a 5-year-old sucking my thumb at the back of class going, screw it, I'm so inadequate. Lover, I hope.
Yes, that was the lover, right? And so the creation then became like, okay, so that's loosely connected to the idea of building your kingdom and legacy, but being so deeply versed in Robert Moore's framework and my own interpretation of it, I'm realizing, okay, so no, there are shadow versions of this as well, if you don't take it seriously. So clarity becomes confusion, and courage becomes cowardice, and a connection becomes conflict, and creation becomes, oh, have I forgotten the word? Creation becomes,
Consumption. I did my homework here.
yes, thank you. Thank you. I don't know why I blanked on that, but yes, I blanked on my own framework, consumption. Thank you. And the way in which you in which you become captured by these four shadow expressions is by not having commitment. Commitment is complacency. So you have all of these words on C. So the complacency commitment axis is like the vertical axis that takes a shadow into an integrated version, in much the same way as we were speaking about in the archetypal frame. And I just found that to be quite neat, because a lot of men, they wake up in the morning and like, oh, how am I going to be a hero today? No, a warrior today. Or how am I going to be a lover today? And they spin out into philosophical meandering thought processes, and it's not very helpful. But if they can actually work inside of a framework where they have very practical, everyday words and qualities and expressions to wrestle with, I felt that no, actually that must be better for most men. And so that was my intention all along. And so the hope then is for a man to move from complacency to commitment. And that is very hard for most men. Very hard. Can be hard for me even, because we've had it so good for so long and now things aren't so good anymore. So men need to reclaim their commitment. As I have, my own Douglas, Donald Miller inspired mission statement, it ends with, because the world will thrive when men become strong again. And because we become too weak, we become too complacent. And so the thriving that comes from being a man that respects and loves and, is proud of himself in a healthy way is something that I want for all men to experience.
There's such a startling clarity. And to forgive the pun or the use of that first word, but the clarity in how you're putting it there, I do get the, I don't know, I, in my world, in my work, I'm always searching for binary. If I can make it night and day, one of two choices, I like that. That just soothes my nervous system. Okay. But when I look at confusion, cowardice, conflict, consumption, immediately I look back and yeah, I still wrestle with these. So definitely not a night and day. No enlightenment here as of yet. But back a few years ago, before my marriage breakdown breakthrough, my experience and what was birthed here, immediately those four characterized so much of how I was being as a man or not being. The confusion, I was hiding behind confusion. It's like, oh, I don't really know what I want, you know. And my queen was always, God, Mark, like, you know, it's like wanting to support me, but I had a new project to take over the world with every conversation, with every retreat, whatever new podcast. Oh, I'm going to do this. So there was this confusion, the cowardice. Well, hey, hand in hand, like just not having the conversations or setting the systems up or doing what was necessary. And the conflict, well, be the husband she brags about. The conflict was the inherent birthplace of it all. And then consumption, I know my evolved version of that, the so-called evolved version was, oh, but I'm consuming podcast material. I'm consuming books. I'm a voracious, you know, I'm consuming practices. So it was like even like that ego had this positive slant on it, but those four words hack my mediocrity to pieces and still do. I can go through every single one of those and go, yeah, okay, wow, this is really a spiritual mirror. So I want to extend that to you, but also guys listening in, just to use it as a tool of precise feedback.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. Good reflection.
What is the magic in commitment? You put it powerfully there, Ivan, that shifting from complacency into full all-in commitment, that it's an immense process. What wisdom do you have? What does that process look like? Yeah, I'm really curious as to what insights you have to support myself listening in a very intimate conversation with you and the guys listening in. What guidance do you have?
I think the first place I want to go with that question is I want to differentiate commitment and discipline. Well, let me hash that out a bit, flesh it out. Discipline doesn't need to be that hard, actually. I remember when I was younger, I had a transformational buddy. We would meet weekly to set our goals for the next week. And we were in our 20s back then, so obviously we had a bit of grandiosity and we just wanted to, you know, get shit done. And we would have to pay fines if we didn't deliver and things like that. So that was all about discipline. Looking back, I don't know that I actually moved forwards a lot, because discipline is, if you look at it etymologically, which I did, it comes from a language, the development of the word. I guess it starts initially in Latin with connotations such as disciple, and you know, that sounds good, but then it goes to France, and then all of a sudden it becomes something completely different. And that's when the association of discipline as some sort of martyrdom or self-punishment starts to enter. And so discipline becomes a word that's punitive. You know, you discipline your children. Yeah. And so of course you don't, but you know, that was the connotation back in the days. You have to discipline your children by exerting physical violence so that they behave. And when you really look at it, it's not that different from what men tend to do to themselves when they think that they're like being badasses. You know, I'm gonna crush it. You know, I'm disciplining myself. I am whacking my naked butt with a bamboo stick, and then I find purpose in that. Commitment It's different because, like, one of the associations with commitment, also obviously everything comes from Latin, but one of the associations was a verb, committere. And I really looked at that. I found it to be an interesting word and a very interesting association because it means to bring together. And when you look deeper into that, the association is something along the lines that this committere is that is a meeting of two things. Like, oh, it's actually can be a meeting of something that's inner and something that's outer, in the sense that commitment is the internal posture that you take. It's an embodied posture. It's not a, like an ego-driven mental posture with which discipline tends to be. Commitment comes from a deeper embodiment in my perception. And in a way, you're creating an internal reality which the world and the forces in it seems to want to meet. And so there's a bringing together, right? And so the way I like to think of commitment is that your life is always a perfect reflection of what you're internally committed to. So if you struggle in love, you kind of like that. You find purpose from it. It's like just the right amount of friction in your life that you feel like you have a quest to figure out, something like that. If you're struggling financially, apart from the fact that, of course, the financial system is utterly crooked, corrupt, and demonic, but aside from that, money itself is not evil, and so there is an energetic of exchange that we need to get right with in order to have the amount of money that we require for at least our basic needs, or maybe even abundance. Yeah. And a lot of people struggle with that. And that becomes their, it's weird to say it, but it becomes their enjoyment. Their nervous system fixates around that and creates a lot of pain and compression and closure, but it feels purposeful. Like there's so much emotion and energy. So I'm committed to those things. And so, hence, this is the life that I get to experience. If I change the commitment, and likely because I've had enough rounds of suffering, it's like, I'm done with it. Finally, I've lived half my life like eating crumbs from the dinner table.
Yeah, I so resonate. Like when you brought in the financial mindset, I was living in poverty, literally in the call with Don Miller, the story brand call that we met on for business mentoring. I was sharing on that. It was 1 year ago. I was living in poverty, and for pretty much all my adult life, poverty. And when it's that cometere to bring together, I was constantly bringing together the situational reality that served. And I've done a deep dive in that. I can see it now, but by God, when I was getting feedback from my queen, a number of years ago, I say, like, oh, come on, you have to do it. I didn't know how committed I was to it. But my commitment, where it ended up bringing me, was it was one of like the last bastions in my life of connection with my mother and father, because of living my authentic truth. Hey, we went vegetarian. They're meat eaters. Good old Irish, farm upbringing, etc. Religion, did it my style. Homeschooling, we started homeschooling. So almost every single aspect of my life as a man was different. What I could connect with my parents was, the hardship. It's a grind. First question is like, oh, how's your car? Because there's almost an inherent value if you can just get your car to get through to the next service without it breaking down, that's a victory. It was mind-boggling for me in the last 12 months, 18 months, to really start pulling that apart and go, okay, I'm using your word now, how deeply committed I was to that pain and suffering showing up because it had a deep emotional meaning for me.
Huh. And that's such a humbling moment, isn't it? To realize, oh wow, I actually like it.
Yeah, this bitch of a thing that I constantly complain about. You
Yes.
actually totally love it. And yeah, same in marriage. It was that conflict, cyclical with my queen. Oh, for God's sake. It was my nice guy, poor struggling bastard against the world. Aren't I the virtuous hero that puts up with all her shit? Like, total ego
Yeah.
trip of the millennia. Here I was, but like, yeah, recreating my own struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very normal, and the moment that we see it is that's a good day, even though it's very humbling because wow, it's like, oh, I can actually change now. Oh, that's good. But the unfortunate thing is that a lot of people's ego structures are so tight because, there's various things that they feel that they need to protect themselves from that, it takes a while, if ever, for that thing to come apart. A lot of people die without realizing that all of their suffering, well, most of their suffering at least, was chosen.
Going into your system, Ivan, my radical curiosity was on the commitment. It makes sense that that rises everything. Do guys have to get a grasp on what clarity, courage, connection, creation are first? Which it's the chicken and egg type thing. Which is coming first here? Where is the most important starting point?
I think that's clarity. Yeah. 'Cause like one of the pillars of the work that I do with them is to support them to find their true north. And sometimes that's harder, takes longer time because that's, you could say, the visionary energy, the visionary force that powers your life. But you can also just look at the battle plans that we create for each new quarter. You create that battle plan with the clarity in mind, hopefully, about where you're going, what matters to you. And if you don't articulate your goals, you obviously you're not going to reach them. And it's where I see the most men falter, is that ask them what they want and they don't know. And it's the simplest but the most fundamental and difficult thing. It's like you have to know what you want. And that requires clarity. So clarity becomes like the gateway to articulating a goal or a destination, right? That you can put your time and your energy behind. Before you have that, I think you described it quite well with the confusion that comes instead of clarity. It's like you just like every day is a new opportunity, and you're just like there's a new business idea every day, kind of a thing, And every single one of them is going to save the world. But the problem is that the only reason why that grandiosity exists is that because you never actually get to battle test your ideas because that's too scary, right? And so the first thing is clarity. Yeah.
What comes after clarity? So let's go with guys listening in.
Yeah.
Busy men, husbands, a lot of them fathers, but to go with it, it's like, okay, cool. Did a couple of weekends, I've journaled it, they get clarity. They're like, okay, I'm honing in here, Ivan. What next?
Well, I list them in the order that I think they should be addressed. So it's courage.
Okay, why
Because
courage?
that's where you find the energy to move. And it may require a lot of energy to get free from the gravitational force of your Identity, you know, it really is hungry. It wants to keep you where you are. Identities want that. They are autonomous, and they want to preserve themselves. So we are, in a way, prisoners of our own identity, our own belief of who we are. So courage, you know, yeah, that will involve sleeping well. It will involve training well, eating well. You need to build your vital force so that you actually have the energy required to shift, you know. And if you have clarity, but you lack that, you're not gonna get far, man. It's like if you can conceive of. There's a loose correlation here also to integral theory, if you're familiar with that.
Not much.
No. But some of your listeners will be, I'm sure. And so the idea is like you have two parts of a quadrant that is our upper, above the separation line, and two parts which are under. And the upper relate more to interior work. And the lower is more, you know, connection systems, things like that. So I see it as first you need to be clear. And if you're not clear about the headline of your life, get clear about something. You know, it doesn't need to be big. You just get something moving. And then you need to be with yourself, commit courageously to refining your own body as the weapon that will liberate you from your self-destructive ways, you know. And once you've taken care of those, you have like done the inner work required to bring it further into the world, into connection and creation. Yeah.
What are the faltering points, the main obstacles in the realm of connection? Again, the context here, and I hear a lot of times with guys, I lived it out myself. Guys, when they come to the work, it's like they'll come to Heroic Husbands Men's circles, and the main box is, oh, I want my marriage to go better. But very
Yeah.
often, it's actually their soul's calling, it's their whole life. So to start having more clarity. But one of the major obstacles I'm seeing is shit happens. Like, how do you bring that out to your wife that has known you as, you know, a high-end accountant for the last 15 years? What obstacles do you find guys have bringing clarity and courage and bringing through that octagon or that gauntlet of keeping connected with the world?
Interestingly, a lot of the time with connection, it's not so much about their psycho-emotional state as it is about skill building. That may be surprising because this is supposed to be like the soft, you know, the mushy dimension, you know. But it seems really that a lot of men just don't have the language of connection. They don't know how to articulate themselves in connection with their wives or children. And I see the frustration that comes from that. It's like there is this internal longing to be freely expressed, and you know, to be understood and to be with, and then it comes out kind of clumsily, and then, oh, but I didn't mean it that way, but hey, now I don't know how to deal with the misunderstanding because, you know, now I'm triggered, and you get into this difficult place of misunderstandings. It's like you get misread. That wasn't my intention, but I just didn't find the words to express what I wanted to. And I think women have the upper hand when it comes to this. They're a lot socially. Their tendency is to develop relational language with a lot greater, much higher resolution. Language, just like a man is likely to have higher resolution language around a car, you know, a woman is likely to have higher resolution around connection. And so, in that sense, connection often becomes the dimension where men feels like outplayed or overpowered because it's not their arena. And so they feel small and they need to hide and they go into the cave and they're like, but nobody understands me. I'm actually a better person than they seem to think. You know, like it gets to be frustrating. But that's actually where ultimately men need to do relational and emotional training. And I think one of the difficult things with men is because, and I experience this more often than I'd like, is because men don't have the language or the emotional awareness a lot of the time to be in disagreement. And so they often either run away or they go into full conflict. But to be actually in the place of exploring, like, but what do you mean? And it's like the way that lands for me is like very, oh, wow, maybe I understood, misunderstood you, so on and so forth. And so, yeah, even in my own my own work, where a lot of my focus has been to raise the capacity that men have for emotional maturity and relational expression, even in addressing some of their hangups, men sometimes get so triggered that they just leave, you know, it's like, because they don't know how to be with it.
Yeah.
It's a struggle.
I particularly love you honing in on it being a skill set. Mm-hmm. You know, that soft sort of, oh, fuck, is, I know myself coming to men's work, it's like, oh, my story was, I don't do that. I'm unable to do emotional attunement. That's what my queen was asking of me. What the fuck does that mean? But honing in on, it's a skill set. It's come up as a bit of a golden thread for me in this conversation with you, Ivan. But I remember that reflection when, I don't know, I was listening to a podcast about money mindset. And the guy was like, yeah, you know, you have struggles with money, but, you know, a lot of guys will have books, but look at your bookshelf. How many books do you have on it about finance? And I was there looking at it going, man, psychology, spirituality, you know, it's like there's 40, 50, 100 books. I don't like 0 books on finance. It was, again, one of these breakthrough clarities of that is so ridiculously simple. You know, guys listening in, that skill set, somebody else has paid the price.
Yeah.
You fine tune what the language or the questions or the responses or how to hold space, like pay the price or right off the back of somebody else who has already paid the price.
Yeah, that's so true. I love that example. And one of the things that I've thought a lot about is the power of language, and that until you have a word for something, that thing doesn't exist for you on some level. And so you see, for instance, in Norway, we have multiple words for snow. You know, it's not a ton, but like a couple. But if you go to the Inuits, they have like, I don't know, 17 or something like that. So the capacity they have to discern the qualities of snow and ice and all of the permutations of it are incredible. And so to use your example of finance, you know, if you don't have the words to speak about finance, money doesn't exist for you. It's just like this annoying thing that somehow is in your life, but you have no fucking clue what it is. And similarly with connection, it's like, if you don't know the language of connection, or if you don't have the words, it doesn't exist for you. You know, it's like, you don't know what it is.
It came through me really cleanly there. Cause you know, it's like the inner child is driving everything. But as you were saying that, I just had this flash of, you know, playground psychology. As a kid, well, definitely it wasn't my thing. But if I didn't know what the game was, I wasn't going to jump into the middle of it. Whereas if somebody was kicking football, I know soccer. I know the rules. I'll jump into, like, pretty much I could jump into a bunch of strangers because I know the rule set. But if we went traveling and whatever game was happening, it's like, I have no clue what they're doing. They're all having such fun. I'd stay back. My five-year-old doesn't know the rule set. So
that's right.
You can't enter that social experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think this is one of those really empowering discoveries that we get to have in life, is that When a new thing arrives in life, that is like, okay, it starts to bring the question to your mind. It's like, is this something that I should learn? Is this important enough? And then your identity could come. It's like, no, it's not for me. I'm not that guy. That's a lot of the time it happens that way because it feels like an all or nothing thing. Either I know it or I don't. But the truth is that, you can take just one tiny little step in that direction, and that's enough for you to feel empowered to take the next one. I was such an idiot when it came to DIY skills just a few years back. And then all of a sudden I was like, no, I don't want to be that anymore. And so I've been taking these little steps, watching tons of YouTube videos, building up my tool collection. Like, I had multiple tools initially that I didn't even know what to use them for. It's like, because I bought a set, I was like, what the fuck am I going to use this bad boy for? But gradually you're like, oh, wow, I'm glad I have it. It's like, because in the same way, I don't have a word or a concept for this tool, so it doesn't exist for me. I have no idea where to put it to use. And it's like just last night Michelle and I, before we became parents, we bought this sweet ass camping gear that we haven't used, because for whatever reason in our world, camping doesn't exist. Even though we have this incredible camping gear, and then last night I was like, or this weekend I was like, no, we need to change that. And so we slept in a tent in the garden last night.
Yes.
Just to make that world come alive for us. And now, how much closer are we to being able to go somewhere in camp? A lot fucking closer, So it's just that small little step that so many people rob themselves of because they think, oh no, it's like all or nothing,
I would feel very empty if I didn't bring it into landing. So there's clarity, courage, connection. Can you speak what wisdom bomb you have about creation, this final part to bring it all complete, your beautiful system?
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, for me, I mean, the words you use are much what I feel. Like, I would feel very empty if I came to this world and left it without creating anything. The human psyche and the human organism are incredible creators. And the truth is that we all create, but many of us, if not the vast majority, we create unconsciously. So our creations are not chosen. And so we become victimized by our own creations because we don't even know that we created them. And then we are in this terrible but amazing place of realizing at one point, hopefully, that my capacity for creation is incredible. I created all of this shit. This whole tangled up mess I created because I love it. And I may rub some people the wrong way here,
Hopefully.
but and I believe it is true. Like, look at your life from the perspective of a man. And I do think a man is not a default state for an adult male, but this is the psychology of a man, I believe, that we're speaking into here, is that you look at your life, and are you going to stand there and say, all of this was done to me? I had no hand in this? No, this is That's the highway to hell right there. You know? It's paved with suffering. And so creation is to step consciously into the conscious building of your life and everything in it. And if you suck at some parts of your life, then okay, maybe you can hire somebody if you have the money for it or whatever. But maybe you can't shortcut your way around it. Maybe you can't bypass it. And then it's your responsibility. You know, it's your responsibility to take charge of that. And that's by doing that, by realizing you are the creator of your own life. And yes, I do believe that there is a God that has made us into powerful creators, and that in a way we're blaspheming if we refuse to deliver on the deal. Yeah, so I just think that's why we're here. And I think as well, you know, if I'm going to go into that potentially unpopular place that I mentioned around the pandemic, I think more and more people are with me at this point, though. It's like, if a human being or a collective of human beings are given ideas about what's normal, and those ideas are psychotic and evil and fucking gross and disgusting, and because we don't want to rock the boat, we try and warp ourselves into normalizing those ideas, then our mind breaks. And when our mind breaks, then we will create an external reality that is a mirror of the way our mind has broken. And so this is the power of propaganda and indoctrination. First, you can normalize insanity, and then the insane people will create insane surroundings. And then how are you going to normalize that? Because, you know, your creative power has been hijacked by people who are much more tuned in to how powerful you are than you are. You know, they are using your own power against you.
Yeah, it's the balls and the vice job. Like when I read that first creation as the fourth step, we homeschool our girls, and it's when I heard Ken Robinson is his name. I heard
Who?
one Ken Robinson.
Don't know
He
him.
he's if you check out TED Talks, he's in the top three or
Oh,
four
yeah, that guy. Yeah,
most
yeah.
popular TED
Yeah.
Talks ever. I believe it was Ken Robinson that spoke in one of his talks that kids entering primary school
Yeah.
or junior school, where around the world, sort of your main entry point, 4 or 5 years of age, 95, 96, or 97% of them test as being creative geniuses. When they get out the far end, secondary school, high school, wherever you are in the world, you know, 16, 17 years of age, 3 or 4% test as having maintained the level of creative genius.
Yep.
I mean, there you go. It's like
Yeah.
it's literally trained out of us. I suppose the important thing I really want to make sure we bring into landing here, it's like it's a skill set, as you mentioned, but it's there. Being trained out of the awareness that is there doesn't mean that has gone anywhere. It's there. I know myself, a couple of years ago, my own, I think I mispronounced your beautiful word, my own spiritual metamorphosis. I think I earlier in this conversation, I noticed I was mispronouncing that. In that journey for myself a few years ago, I didn't think I could create anything, and I was in desperation. But it's to every guy listening in, like Ivan, myself, regular dudes. And I find that's the biggest lie on the planet, where there's like it's pitched that the Olympians, of course, we're in the Olympic time right now at the time of recording, but there's the big ones in business, and there's celebrities, the whole celebrity psychology. There's these other people, and then there's us regular schmucks that just do the 9 to 5 job, the you know, the guy at home doing the thing, but I'll never get there. That's the sickest teaching on the planet. It
Yes.
has been, you know, Gandhi, for me, when I read his story, he was quite a mediocre barrister, reportedly. And then he became the Gandhi that we now refer to. And there's just countless stories of, it's always going to be a regular dude. It's always going to be a regular guy that at some point finds that part inside of him. So just to make sure guys are going home with an infinite sense of possibility with that.
Awesome.
Ivan,
yeah,
brother, this is an amazing framework. The 5D man lifestyle. Clarity
Thank
multiplied
you.
By courage, multiplied by connection, multiplied by creation. And then above all, as you said, that's like that part in the middle of it all, holding it all up, is if you don't commit to bring it all together. It's an amazing framework that, thank you for gifting that to me personally, but also to every guy listening in.
Appreciate that. Yeah, you're very welcome.
Ivan, I'm curious. I know you're in the middle of reconstructing, you know, what that platform is going forward.
Completely, yeah.
honoring that you have come into that this conversation with that in mind. But if there are guys that just are really feeling deeply inspired and they'd love to reach out to you to find out more, where can they go online to connect with you?
Cool. Yeah, so you're right. I have all kinds of websites online that don't really represent where I'm at now. And I'm currently working with a lot of new marketing and branding material for the next stage of my work. But it's not quite ready. So I run a men's community that I used to call Ground and Glory. And I'm not going to go deeply into why I called it that, but I did find that men didn't quite understand what it was. And so that's changing into the House of Heroes. But nevertheless, groundandglory.com still exists. So you can find a way to connect with me there. Of course, there's innerthrone.com, which is where the initiation was hosted back in the days. You know, so you can contact me through innerthrone.com. I also have a YouTube channel, a small YouTube channel that I sometimes post to. I would love for you to connect with me there and like, subscribe on everything. And, you know, I'm going to put some more energy into that going forwards. But, you know, it's if I may, I might mention a couple of the projects that are coming.
By all means, please do.
Great. Yeah, so one of the things that I'm doing is that I'm developing a whole like software suite that I call the Armory, that is a support structure for men who are interested in living in this 5D man lifestyle. I'm really excited about that. So that's something that you can do to do your battle plans and support yourself strategically and tactically every day. You cannot sign up for it yet, but this is something that is going to come out to a lot of people. I have a new round of Grit, which is the 1 month high intensity online boot camp, which introduces a man to the 5D man lifestyle. You know, so if you actually want to experience the 5D man lifestyle, then I have a training for that. It's called Grit, and you can find that on groundandglory.com/grit. And I start a new round on the 21st of October. So if anything is coming out of this, then join me there. You know, if you find that sounds exciting, I'd love to see some of your men, or even you if you want to join. And great.
Beautiful. Ivan, brother, this has been an astounding time sharing with you. Man, the amount of embodied wisdom. Really, really beautiful voice for men in this new wave.
Thank you, Mark.
This new wave moving forward.
Indeed. It's been a pleasure to talk with you today, Mark.
Thanks, brother.